This is the Diehards of Diehards.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Tom Brady takes the snap, drops to the knee, and the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title.
The Diehards start now on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and Mark Linehan.
And welcome into another edition of the Diehards. Let me set the scene for you. It's a battle of the Sox, the red and white, at historic Fenway Park today, opening day. Yawkey Way.
Don't even get me started.
Lansdowne, Boylston streets are packed. The peanut guy is slinging nuts.
Yeah.
The sausage guy
is still
grilling like the Dickens. The world-famous baseball tavern is packed to the gills.
Don't make me cry. What would I have done with $1,000?
With people pounding as many Anheuser-Busch products as they can, as Linehan
I'm gonna cry.
Can serve as many as he can before
and overserve as many
they
as
have
can.
To go out the door to arrive at the hallowed park in the second inning. It's cold. It's cloudy. It's 44 degrees and raining. Who cares? It's the Boston Red Sox opening day 2020. All good
cry.
In the world, right, buddy?
I'm going to cry. First one in 20 years. No bueno. Unbelievable.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
The money
man.
Being lost in that neighborhood today and obviously around the country, but.
How are you doing?
How do you think I'm doing?
You doing all right,
buddy? Opening day.
You look great.
I do.
You don't look sick.
No, I'm fine. You know, I told people I just cough because I smoke weed.
I understand that. But then you walked in my door today in my studio here in my man cave,
yep.
And you gave a couple of coughs and made me a little nervous.
I like
Is it just you wanted me to get away from you a little bit?
Just a scam I use at CVS to cut the line.
I see what you do there.
It works. It's like the Red Sea. I just tried it at the supermarket. One little cough. Boom. I'm first in line.
Andrew Carlson running rock and roll control in Houston. How's everything going there in H-Town, buddy?
Oh, we're making it through, man. These are weird times for everybody, but
sure
we're making the best of it down here.
All right. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. NBA expert, our friend Ian Thompson, is going to join us on the Progressive Guest Line. Former QB1 in the NFL in Notre Dame, Rick Meyer, will join us as well. The sports professor to talk the business of sports.
Business.
Or the lack of business in sports. Our friend Rick Horrell will join us on the program tonight.
You think he'll be in an airport? Remember that used to be every time we talked to him?
Well, he's not. I don't think he's traveling right now,
so I don't think he'll be
in an airport. No, nobody is. John Serenitas, Dr. Football. He's also a big wrestling guy. WrestleMania 36, I believe it is happening this weekend.
I'll be quiet during that.
We'll talk to him. But coming up next...
You're listening to the Diehards on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and Mark Linehan.
And let's go right to the Progressive Guest Line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at Progressive.com today. Joining us... Drew Marichello, the athletic director from Boston University. Hey, Drew, welcome to SB Nation Radio. It's Anthony and Mark Linehan, who I know you're very familiar with, Mr. Linehan, who does the hockey broadcast
He's
for you.
He's the president of my fan club.
I'm sure he is. Hey, Drew, how you doing, buddy?
It's good to be with you guys. I'm not going to be admitting to being the president of Linehan's fan club on the radio show tonight. So
take a number.
Hey, Drew, first of all, you and your family, everybody safe? Everybody good?
Yeah, everybody's safe. We're lucky. Knock on wood. I try to explain to my kids the difference between adjusting and being inconvenienced and having real hardships. There's a real difference there. And so far, we're holding up okay.
Hey, Drew, talk a little bit about how heartbreaking this whole situation has been for winter and spring sports teams, especially the seniors who've worked their whole lives to get to this point. And for most seniors, it's over. I know there's some gray area where maybe they can come back and maybe there's scholarships. But just talk a little bit about how abruptly, you know, careers ended for some people.
Yeah, abruptly is the accurate depiction of it. You know, when you think about getting to the end of your senior year and the end of your career and all that went into it, I mean, that's a real emotional time when it ends. I mean, there's a lot of tears, a lot of great memories that you have, and again, a lifetime of memories, and it just ended. They didn't have that pageantry. They didn't have the senior day. They didn't have the chance to, you know, hug their teammates going off the field or off the ice one more time. And it is sad. I think our students, by and large, have taken it very well. You know, we had to deliver a lot of hard messages, and I do think that they received them very well, very maturely. I still think even 2-3 weeks later, they're adjusting accordingly. And I do think that the reason for that is because this is obviously bigger than playing a game and bigger than a senior day. And, you know, this is a worldwide event. And somebody said, how often do you know when you're actually living in a chapter of history? I mean, you're living in a whole book of history right now, and
sure.
We're part of that right now. So I know that our kids, who their careers ended again just rather quickly, I think they get it. And I don't mean to say that it's not a big deal, but I also think that they have perspective of what a big deal is in the world, and what the end of a career is. Those are two different things.
Yeah, Drew, talk about the crazy time. I believe it was the 11th, the Wednesday night, your basketball team wins the league. I see you dancing on television, as a matter of fact, on ESPN. You're all set. You're going
quite,
to the,
quite a dancing
yeah,
watcher,
you are.
By
he
the
can,
way.
Yeah, he can get it going. Obviously, you're on your way to the NCAAs, the biggest goal, the biggest thing of all possible. You know, you get back in the middle of the night, I would assume, from Colgate. It's a Thursday afternoon. The hockey team's practicing. They're basically ready to get on a roll. There's no doubt in my mind about that. They're getting ready to go on a bus to Lowell, and then all of a sudden, boom. Talk about those just basically 12 hours.
Yeah, Mark, the 12 hours were certainly a whirlwind, and our planning for what we thought might happen certainly started at the end of February. We put some mitigation measures in place, and as you remember, Hockey East decided that there were going to be no handshakes, just a fist bump with the gloves on, and we were starting to assess our travel impact, and would we be able to go certain places. And we had teams going on spring break, and we made the determination not to send some teams based upon the safety and what our thoughts were, what's in the best interest of the safety of the team. And we rerouted some teams. We told some teams that you're not going to go, and again, our coaches received that very well. And then we're still going through the winter championships. Our spring teams are, again, on spring break. We're preparing for them to come back to campus, preparing for the spring season to hit. And we had a few university meetings, 10th, 11th, and I knew that we were going to have a travel ban that was going to be imposed. And I knew that we were going to go to a distance learning online module for at least a couple of weeks to assess things. But we go to the 11th, and we're hosting the Frozen Four for women's ice hockey at Aganis Arena. Our women's basketball team is playing a semifinal Patriot League game on the 12th. And, of course, you mentioned the men's basketball team on the 11th. We win for the first time in our history of being in the Patriot League. Just an absolute, crescendo of emotions. I'm glad you liked the dance. It was a wonderful celebration. And everybody just, was on top of the world, and I made the mistake of in between the celebration, I checked my cell phone and looked down and saw 93 texts, and I read one of the texts and it said something about the NBA, and I read that oh boy, here we go. And again, that was the 11th, 9:30 at night. I knew that we had meetings as the Patriot League that morning. I thought the spring would kind of hit a pause button, and that the winter teams would play the championship. If you remember, the NCAA announced that the championships would be held with no fans. And that was how we were proceeding. That was the operational plan. I'll say to you guys that we had so many operational plans that changed every 15 minutes, like everybody did. And yeah, it was crazy. And they rightfully changed. We had to adjust with the times. We had to adjust with different governmental decrees. And certainly that's the way it is. We get paid to adjust. But when we are heading back from Colgate, I knew that the Patriot League spring season was going to be, the cease order had been put into place, and I think that was the right decision. Matter of fact, I know that was the right decision, and I applaud our presidents for being out front of it. We were one of the first leagues to really take a stance of safety is most important, and we have other issues, other world issues that are going to impact our campus. And with all due respect to our athletes who put in so much work, we just knew that this wasn't going to happen, and we had to had to convene a conference call. I was driving back from Hamilton, New York. I was surprised I had reception, but driving back, had to convene a conference call. We got all of our coaches on the call within 20 minutes and essentially delivered the message that the winter teams are still going to continue and finish their championship, but the spring teams are done. And I remember saying to the coaches, I sound like I'm devoid of emotion right now. I'm not. I'm just in a hurry to deliver the message because I want you to deliver the message to your students quickly so they don't pick it up on Twitter or one of their friends from another school doesn't call them. I want the coaches to deliver the message. And again, we had teams on the water with rowing. We had teams on a softball field. We had a team on a hotel. We had to mobilize pretty quickly. I'm proud that we were able to do that. So as much as the message was painful, you know, we certainly were able to deliver it to them somewhat personally. But we get back to campus and we have two phone calls with Hockey East and with the Patriot League. And by that time, guys, the tournaments just started to domino. I can't remember the order, but it was, you know, Big Ten and SEC. Yeah, and they just dominoed. And again, we questioned the wisdom. We're playing a home women's basketball game that night, and if we win that game, we're going to go to the championship. And certainly Marissa Mosley turned us around in quick order, and we're thinking we're going to win that championship too, quite honestly. And that, within the span of 6 minutes, I believe both Hockey East and women's basketball were also canceled as the NCAA soon followed. I think 2 hours later, saying that all tournaments were canceled. So that's a synopsis. We went back and put this in a timeline just so we could see all the steps that, you know, we had to undertake. And I think that even with my rambling account of 2 weeks, I think you can kind of understand, yeah. And you guys know how many changes and how many hops we had to make just to change course. But our kids received it well; they really did. I think you know, it's a tough message, but I'm just so proud of the way that they've handled it in a mature fashion. And again, I keep going back to the fact that they get it, and it's not about a softball game at this point; it's about world health.
True. We got about a minute left here, but not that there's ever a good time or a bad time for something like that to happen, but could there have been a worse time, as one season ending and the other team starting, so you had to deal with basically two seasons of sports?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, Mark. You're also dealing with the spring break issue, which I think really complicated things, because you've got teams going all over the country, and you've got teams that are going to come back to campus. Then again, we issued a, hey, don't come back to campus if you don't have to. And it complicated it just because of the timing. So never a good time. But probably this is about the most complicated time, because your spring teams have already played some games too. And that's certainly, you know, that it's not like it's January where they haven't started. So yeah, this is about as complicated of a timeline as it can be.
Hey Drew, appreciate you taking the time and joining us. There's so much more we want to ask you, so we'd love to get you on later on down the line. I need to know about this transfer portal. I need like transfer portal 101. What this whole thing's all about. So we'll get you on in the next couple of weeks to discuss that. All right, buddy.
As soon as somebody explains to me all the nuances of the transfer portal, I'll be sure to explain it to you. So.
True, I've been in the transfer portal since 1985.
As I said, as soon as someone explains it to me. So.
Thank you.
All right,
thanks,
guys,
very
thanks.
Much for your time,
great
Drew.
To be
I appreciate
with
you. It. There
Stay,
he is.
Wash your hands.
Drew Maricello, the athletic director from Boston University.
You know, I agree with you, Pep. Talk about. I had 8 million more questions about things.
But I mean, again, he broke down that one day, and it was very probably similar to a lot of these other schools all across the country where they got the message and they said, hey, this tournament stopped. And now you have to reach out to all these different coaches, all these different players, all these different
and like
people
I said,
in your organization.
Two seasons going at the same time.
It's crazy. Crazy stuff. Quick TO, we'll come right back. Our good friend, author of the book, The Soul of Basketball, NBA expert, the best in the business, Ian Thompson joins us next. You're listening to The Diehards. He's Linehan. I'm Pepe. It's SB Nation Radio.
The Diehards continue now on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and Mark Linehan.
When your battery goes dead, everything could come to a stop. Don't take a chance on getting stranded. O'Reilly Auto Parts will test your battery free of charge. If your battery needs to be replaced, O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery that fits your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Make sure your vehicle's prepared for the weather ahead by getting your battery tested for a low price. Make sure you get that tested at our friends at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Getting right back to the Progressive guest line. Joining us, NBA expert, insider, guru, author of The Soul of Basketball. Been writing about sports in America and around the world for three decades. Formerly the Boston Globe, the National Sports Daily, the International Herald Tribune, and most important resume tidbit, friend of the diehards,
yep.
Ian Thompson. How are you, buddy?
Doing great, thanks. I'm missing the games, but great to be on with you.
Did you wash your hands today?
I did. I don't know who gave me the idea, but I was glad they did.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I finally listened.
Hey, Ian, let's get right into it. What is going to happen this season, if anything? Is there going to be a season?
I really don't think so. Maybe they'll try to play an exhibition or two just to keep themselves out there, something to provide a little bit of closure. But I just don't – if you just look at what's going on in the country and the fact that we still don't – none of us still knows if we have it or not. The CDC said 1 in 4 people have it and don't know they have it because they aren't showing any symptoms, yet you have it on you, you have it in you, the virus. So, and then we don't have enough tests. And so the thing's just spreading without us knowing who has it. Under those circumstances, how can you get a bunch of people, even if it's just players playing in an empty gym, how can you get those people to play together? And then what's it going to mean anyway? So you have a playoffs, and then LeBron James tests positive for it. I mean, so what did that mean without him? What if LeBron and Kawhi and Giannis all test positive for it? Midway through the tournament, no less. I mean, so I'm sure they're going to try everything they can to put some kind of basketball out there. So they can at least have occupied some bit of, you know, June or the summer or whenever they can manage it. But I just think it's a pipe dream to think that they're going to have a full-on tournament and all these different rounds and they'll be able to crown the champion. And even if they do, what's it going to mean anyway? It's going to be the ultimate asterisk, right? I mean, sure. Is LeBron going to be able to say, I'm better than Jordan because I won these championships? Jordan's going to say, yeah, you won a fake championship. It wasn't a real championship.
How about my idea, Ian? We drop them all in Vegas, play at an NCAA style, one and done, get it done in a week.
Yeah, see, now, I would love that, Mark, but you know what's going to happen. People that want to say, God, we like this a lot better than we like the NBA playoffs. So what good does that do them? Next year. They go back next year, everybody's saying, you know, we liked your league a lot better when it was one and done. This stinks. I really think they got to think like that. They can't – that kills their whole business model. The NBA playoffs is 2 months of basketball every night. They make a lot of money off that. Would they make as much from a one-and-done tournament? Maybe, maybe not, especially if the big names get knocked out early. You know, the reason why the playoffs works for them business-wise is because they can tell you that the best players are going to be playing for, you know, 5, 6, 7 games each round. Those guys, those stars, the ones that draw in the viewership, they get to occupy the space on TV for a long time. The NCAA tournament works because we don't know any of the players anyway. They come and go, and they're not very good to start with, you know. And so that works because you just watch the games. You don't really care who wins. You just bet on somebody, Iona, to win or something like that. But the NBA is on a different model.
Ian, you were courtside for 3 NBA finals with Magic Johnson and Larry Bird, along with being, you know, in Barcelona for the original Dream Team with those guys and Michael Jordan and everybody else. What is your greatest memory in your, you know, of your career, your greatest NBA moment, if you will?
So, I was courtside when Magic Johnson made that baby hook shot in the 87 finals. At the end of the 87 finals. Yeah. That was in the Boston Garden. Right. I think it was Game 4. And the Celtics were overmatched that year, you know, but if they had won that game, they would have tied the series with Game 5 in Boston, which they ended up winning. But they would have had a chance to be up 3-2 going back to L.A. if they could have won that game. And it was a terrific game, went back and forth. So I think Larry hits the shot, and then Magic hits that baby hook over all three of the Hall of Famers. And it, back and forth it went, and there was a timeout with 2 seconds left while the Celtics were drawing up their last play. And I was like 25 years old or something. I'm sitting courtside, and I'm just shaking my head. Have I told you guys this story? So I'm shaking my head with my mouth open, just looking like a total dope, as usual.
And, I've told that story.
yeah, you've heard themes of this story many times. And you know how you can feel when somebody's looking at you, and I look up, and it's Earl Strom, the referee.
Yep.
He was standing center court with the ball under his arm between his elbow and his hip. And he's staring at me, and he's just mimicking me. He's mocking me. He's staring at me, and he's got his mouth wide open, and he's just shaking his head slowly back and forth.
He's just totally mocking me. I might have overserved Earl Strom that night. Hey, you never know who's listening. Your favorite basketball coach, Billy Donovan, wants to know if Larry missed up on that switch with McHale when Magic hit the shot.
Well, I mean, you know, Larry wasn't known for making those switches. So he might have been. But I don't think there was enough space for Larry to get in anyway. All three of them were on the ball. You know, he made that hook shot over all three guys. It's just a famous picture. And it was a perfect way to end that game. But I still can't get over the fact that Earl Strom, with all this pressure on him, you know, one of the great games in the history of the NBA, the biggest rivalry, and it's all going to come down in the next 2 seconds. And so many of these referees I know, they'd be scared to death right then. They'd be like, oh, my God, I hope I don't screw this up. This guy had enough time on his hands to give a bunch of crap to some 25-year-old dope sitting courtside. You know, that's how nervous he was.
Hey, and talk about the Lakers. This obviously a disaster of a year with Kobe dying, and now a team that probably could have won a championship. Are they going to be able to recover from this?
Yeah, I mean, this is a total Hollywood kind of soap opera. This is bad TV, is what this is in a way for them, because it's just a complete. Not that this matters in light of the bigger issues in our world right now, or even in light of the death of Kobe Bryant, but this is just a waste of a fantastic year from LeBron James. And Scottie Pippen, a lot of other people thought he was all washed up and he had nothing more to offer. And the guy came back, and I think he's been, you know, he's not going to win the MVP. Giannis should win the MVP, but LeBron's been the best player this year for what he's done for positioning the Lakers, I think, to win the championship. I think they should win the championship, or they would have won if there would have been one. And is he going to be as good next year? He's going to be a year older. You know, I guess he's got Space Jam to look forward to, but at his age, it will be someday. But they're just it's just a waste of a precious year, and how many more is he going to have left? The guy's been playing at both ends of the floor. He's been playing defense as well for the first time in a number of years. He's been showing real leadership in every area for them. And I think it's, 18 years in the league now? I just don't know how many more chances he's going to give them to do this. And they may really look back on this as a real lost opportunity looking forward.
Ian, we've got about 30 seconds left here. You mentioned Space Jam. Michael Jordan, 30 for 30, coming out this month. They bumped it up, ESPN. How fired up are you for that series?
I am. And one of the other things I'll always remember is being courtside for the afternoon when he scored the 63 against the Celtics. And I just never saw anything like it. And I watched him play a lot after that. But I never saw him look the way he looked then. He just levitated above everybody to score all those points. So I really am looking forward to seeing that.
Ian, thank you so much. You're the best. Be safe, you and your family. We appreciate you taking the time. We'll talk to you soon. Okay, buddy?
Thanks, Ian.
Hey, likewise, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Rick Myra will join us next on the Progressive Guest Line. Keep it right here. We are the Diehards. Pepe Linehan on SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to the Diehards on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and Mark Linehan.
And yes, indeed, we are at the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios East here in Boston. Anthony Pepe, Mark Linehan, we're going to hop right back to the Progressive guest line. Progressive, making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Second pick in the 93 draft. Former Notre Dame QB1, played 12 seasons in the NFL. Now owner of a wine company. Rick Myers on the line. Hey, Rick, welcome to SB Nation Radio. It's Anthony and Mark. How you doing?
Thanks. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We're doing all right, man. The first question I have to come right out the gate is, you were hyped as the next Joe Montana. I mean, no pressure there, right?
No, that was easy. Yeah, no problem.
So first of all, you and your family safe? Everybody good?
Yeah, thanks. Everybody's good. It's I have two college kids and a high school son, so three boys, and selfishly, it's just nice to have them around, to be honest. So it's been good, and they have each other, so we're staying busy, and everybody's healthy.
Rick, as I mentioned, you were the second pick in the 93 draft behind Drew Bledsoe. We'll talk about that later on down the line here. But with the April draft coming up here in a few weeks, we think, can you talk a little bit about what's going on in the young minds of these QBs getting ready to get drafted?
It's so weird. It's different now, obviously,
sure.
The way the draft has turned into a spectacle. But it's still an exciting just time of your life, not knowing where, you know, especially the guys toward the top half of the draft. Like, they know they're going somewhere. They just don't know where. So, you know, it's a good problem to have, kind of being interested in finding out where you're going to start your career. And, you know, hopefully things can happen on time and teams can get to work. But right now, who knows? So it's a screwy situation, and I feel for these guys because there's a lot of uncertainty to start with. But you know, at some point there'll be a draft, and the whole thing will fall into place, and everybody will get back, you know, get on football here soon enough.
Hey, Rick, we have something in common. I went to the University of New Hampshire with Coach Peter Voss. Was there a few years before he was your position coach out at Notre Dame. Coach Voss still kicking, still coaching everywhere. Great guy.
You sound like him.
You want me to yell at you?
it's just the accent is crazy. Yeah, we stayed in touch periodically. You know, it's not a lot, but through some texts and stuff. And yeah, we had a good run together. It was fun to be coached by him.
Hey, Rick, how much would things have been different for you if you were taken by the Patriots and maybe got to work with Bill Parcells? And got to hang around here and talk like us.
No idea. I don't know. We, honest to God, you know, Drew's told the story, you know, a lot too. We didn't know what was going to happen until it happened, as far as the draft stuff. So, you know, we were leading up to the thing, kind of knowing both teams said they were taking whichever one, and so it was exciting to kind of imagine that, you know, this was. Remember, in '93, there wasn't a lot of, you know, history with the Patriots, the six Super Bowl stuff. Yeah. Now it was like, you know, not even a part of the equation. So it wasn't the sexiest organization, you know, and neither was Seattle because there was no banners there either. So we were both going to go to teams that were going to need some instant help. And, you know, it worked out the way it did. And Drew had a good run. And, you know, we both wound up playing for other organizations over time. And that's just the way the business is.
Quote, buy, and save on home insurance with Progressive's new home, quote, Explorer, only at progressive.com. Rick Myra joining us here on the Progressive guest line, SB Nation Radio. Hey, Rick, I do have to ask you, and I know we'll get into the Mirror Wine Company, but in 1998, you signed with Green Bay. What was it like playing with the guy like Brett Favre? What was he like as a teammate?
He was great. We were friendly in the off seasons and did a lot of like golf tournaments and fun stuff together. So, at that point for me, I needed, you know, if I wasn't going to start, I wanted to be somewhere supporting somebody I felt highly of. And, you know, they were coming off, a couple Super Bowl, you know, opportunities. They won one. It was an offense I was getting to know in Chicago and wanted to kind of continue with the West Coast stuff. So, Andy Reid being there was another big piece. Sure. Mike Holmgren, those were guys that quarterbacks wanted to work with. So, you know, Mark Brunell had left, and Ty Detmer had left, and Doug Peterson was still there, but there was room for another guy, and the timing was good for me, and I really enjoyed our time in Green Bay.
What was it like being a QB1 walking around the campus of Notre Dame and for Lou Holtz? And I'd love to hear a Lou Holtz story.
Well, it wasn't the fanciest place there ever has been. I mean, it's a small campus and, you know, huge Catholic following. And so, you know, we had eyeballs on us from all over the place. But, you know, the teams, we were on very competitive teams. My years were, you know, after, you know, following a national championship season of 1988, there was depth at every position. Expectations were, you know, to win the whole thing. And without playoffs and the way it works today, I mean, you know, you kind of needed to run the table and play in a significant bowl game and win. And we put ourselves in position to be in the mix a bunch of times. Coach was hard on us. The frustrating thing with him is he'd go speak to all these companies, and over time he do all these appearances and speak and do magic and people laugh, and he's really, really good at that. But that isn't the side of him we saw very often. You know, we were the team that he was whipping into shape and trying to tell us that Navy could beat us. You know, we got to prepare like it's the toughest game we're going to have all year and stuff. And so people just thought he was this fun loving guy. And you know, that he was much harder on us, which is what we needed and why we all respect it so much now. But at the time, it was every day was work, and you know, we win by 20 or 30, and you know, we watch the film and you point out the things that didn't go right, and you walk away feeling like we lost sometimes. So he was a perfectionist, because I think he thought we could actually run the table and we should be one of the top teams all those years, and generally we were. But we've stayed in touch. I've been able to help with his charity efforts and stuff with the Holtz's Heroes Now, which was the Lose Lads Foundation for years. And so, you know, the second home game every year, a bunch of guys come back to campus, and it's a chance to reconnect with Coach and spend some time with him. And I got a lot of time with him this last fall, which was awesome. And I hope we can do it again if there's going to be football this fall.
Rick, you and Drew Bledsoe obviously linked together for years from the draft days back, but now both in the same wine industry. You with the Mirror Wine Company, my obvious question is, whose wine is better?
Well, ours is better. I mean,
of course, duh.
Look, this is just as competitive as sports. I mean, but we're super supportive of each other, and we're doing some fun stuff over this stay-at-home stretch we're on, and we've created a wine odyssey, and we're having some fun. We really kind of learned wine at the same time, and some of it was together, just off-season stuff or things where we would cross paths throughout the year. But we talked about doing something together as a business after football. It just, you know, wasn't perfectly right for just because we didn't kind of want to mess up a really good friendship. So yeah. We wound up having our own projects, and we kid about it being competitive. But, I mean, you know, it's fun to have each other. This social media thing we're doing has been kind of gaining momentum, and it's fun to compare notes and talk about wines we had years ago, or the reasons why we got into the business, or the people we knew at the beginning, and some of the old vintages of our own stuff. And but you know, you don't just drink your own wine. You know, there's tons of different ways we all learn, and we challenge each other at the beginning to sort of one up the other guy with the kind of stuff that's hard to find, and we'd flex a little bit on, hey, I got this, what do you know about this, and it went back and forth and back and forth, and that's how we got hooked, and that's why we wound up in the business, you know, after a few years.
How did an Indiana kid end up getting in the wine industry like that?
You know, living on the West Coast is why. I live in Southern California, so when we were in Seattle those first four seasons, I would come here in the off season sometimes, and we wound up moving down here in San Diego back in 97 before I went to Chicago. And it was just a great off season spot in January and those months. So, everybody that was around here, you know, kind of had restaurants, and we were pre-kids too. So we would, it was easy to go out for dinner and you know, try this, you know, different stuff all the time. And, that's the irony of the whole thing. Like, you know, there was never a bottle of wine in my house growing up. I don't remember ever seeing my parents have wine. So
does Bud Light
this
count?
Is not something. Yeah, exactly. I mean, they went from college, you know, stuff like that to some pretty high end wine, and we tried to kind of bring the two together. But there's still a bit of a gap. But we do pretty good business in Indiana, and there's some great restaurants there.
Hey, Rick, be honest. I'm hearing rumors out there. And, you know, so you played in the NFL for 12 seasons. In 2004, you played with the Detroit Lions, and then you retired. Is it true that you started the wine company because you needed to drink after being in that organization?
No. It wasn't perfect, but Steve Mariucci got me to go one more year, and I enjoyed our time there. It's funny, the places you wouldn't expect or maybe you wouldn't choose to move to, like at that time, moving to Detroit was a little, you know, it was kind of beat up. I mean, that industry was getting hurt, but we had a great experience in Birmingham where we lived for those 6 months. You know, I wish the team would have done better, but I was there to help Joey Harrington and try to make him, or, you know, kind of just help him with some experience. And, you know, we did the best we could, but there just wasn't enough ammo, and there still isn't. They still haven't really won. But it was really because of Steve Mariucci, and I fit into his system, and I could just get plugged in and got to work immediately. And, you know, when I finished that season, I knew – I honestly went into the last game. I'm like, this is my last game. And I wasn't playing in the game. But, you know, a lot of guys, I think, in the offseason, they realize it. I knew it then. I thought, you know, this is, you know, I'm. It's 12 is a nice round number. A lot of teams. I don't need another team. I'm content with my body's in one piece, and I'm still young enough to go do other things. So I was fine walking away.
Rick, talk about your second career here as QB1 of Mirror Wine Company, mirrorwine.com. What's it all about? How can people get your wine? Talk a little bit about the company.
Well, we started in 08, end of 08, so really 09, kind of beginning of 09. And, you know, it was 500 cases of one wine, a Cabernet that had two vineyards that – it was built from two vineyards that mirrored each other across San Helena in kind of the middle of Napa. So it was just a way to get started small. We didn't invest in property. I don't live there full time. I wanted to be in the business and learn, and my family was happy in San Diego and the kids were young. So, it's become more and more what I do all the time. And, you know, like I said, it's competitive and I have a lot of pride and, you know, I don't want our brand to be misrepresented ever. So I, you know, if we do dinners and stuff, I'm the one doing it. And I'm the one at most of all those things. So, you know, the website mirrorwine.com has current release stuff. You know, we're pushing harder in the social media, you know, part just because everybody's home and there's less going on. So it's kind of a fun way to interact. But, you know, we distribute to almost 10 states, and I don't know how that's going to change with, you know, the restaurant industry these next 6-12 months. Maybe, you know, it's going to be hard, but a lot of our wine goes through our website, very small production stuff, kind of on purpose. And, you know, once it's gone, and then we go to the next year. But it's been a fun thing to build. We have five different wines, but Cabernet is really the focus, and Cabernet is what I like the most, and that's how we got started, and that's how we're going to continue it.
Good stuff, Rick. We have to wrap things up. Give us 30 seconds to Mirror Family Foundation. Talk about your family foundation.
Well, we started when I left school. We gave the endowment a little money to scholarship some kids, and over the years, I've had 25 or 6 kids now that have gotten, you know, some money through their 4 years. And the business can't, you know, there's a lot of wine at auctions and charity fundraisers and stuff. So we can help raise money in certain places, and people that want to help us with the charitable part, we find ways to do that. And they go hand in hand. We're going to get asked for donations and stuff anyway, so it's fun to grow both things at the same time.
Hey, Rick, thank you so much for taking the time. Good luck and keep up the good work on social media with you and Drew Bledsoe. And in full disclosure, we offered Drew a slot on the show.
I told him your wine was better.
So we'll see what happens.
That'll get his attention. Yeah, hit him with that. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
Rick Meyer joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line, SB Nation Radio. Again, it's mirrorwine.com. Quick TO, we'll come back and talk a little bit about what's happening in the second hour here on the Diehards. He's Linehan and Pepe. It's SB Nation Radio.
The Diehards continue now on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's Anthony Pepe and Mark Linehan.
SB Nation Radio. Sad news coming out of New Orleans and in the sports world. We know what's happening in the real world. But in the sports world, Ed Orgeron and his longtime wife, Kelly, are splitting up. We do have Ed on the phone right now quickly. Ed, are you okay?
Things just didn't work out with my wife. Go Tigers.
No, I don't think that's going to happen, man. The divorce is happening.
Well, that's what happened. She don't like me no more. I tell her I'm a great state loser. I had a plenty of girl down here like Ed Orgeron. Go Tigers. Sorry, kind of go. You can be.
Are you going to miss your wife, Kelly, though?
I'm going to miss her a little bit, yeah, except on Saturday, because I'm busy with the Tigers. Time to find a new one. Next woman up.
Are you sad at all, Ed?
I'm very sad for 2 days, then a time to wash my hands and watch some tape on the Tigers.
Again, what is wrong with you?
I don't know.
All right, Ed. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate
it. Anytime for you, Pepe. One more thing for you. Go Tigers.
Dr. Football and the sports professor, Beantown Rundown, coming up in the next hour.